From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1997 in the Miss Teen USA beauty pageant. The man who owned that pageant was Donald Trump. Mariah Bellotto was Miss Vermont Teen USA that year. She was backstage in the dressing room changing her clothes. She turned around, and as she recently told reporters, she saw a man in her room unexpectedly. It was Donald Trump. Three other young women were in that room as well, also changing clothes. They asked to remain anonymous. Now, Bellotto says Trump told them, quote, "Don't worry, ladies, I've seen it all before." They were rushing to cover their bodies. One called it shocking and creepy. Donald Trump himself has essentially confirmed this account when he boasted to Howard Stern that because he owns these competitions, he can get away with stuff like that. By now, you've heard the comments Trump was caught on tape making to Billy Bush in 2005. And I've got no need to replay them here. You've heard them. But instead, we want to discuss this hour what the broader questions are, because this is not a man who made some lewd remarks in isolation. He has a history of it for decades in public and private. And in the past 48 hours, his surrogates have conjured various ways of defending that conduct. Let me go ahead and welcome our guests for the hour as we discuss all of this. Dr. Elizabeth Thorpe is back. She's an assistant professor of communications at the College at Brockport. Dr. Thorpe, welcome back.
Thank you.
Erin Kate Howard is here. She's an equality activist, co-creator of Lady Parts Theater. Nice to see you, Erin Kate.
Thanks.
Lucas Sink is here. He's a facilitator in Resolve's Stand Up Guys program. Lucas, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And John Cole is here, Vice President of Outreach for the University of Rochester student organization MOVE. That's Men Opposing Violence Everywhere. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Evan.
I thought about the audio from that 2005 thing. Everybody's heard it, so we don't have to do that again. But I'm not sure everybody's heard what Trump has said to Howard Stern about how he was able to use his position to see young women nude. And if it sounds sort of outlandish, let's listen to what Trump had to say about it.
I'll tell you the funniest is that I'll go backstage before a show.
Yes.
And everyone's getting dressed and ready and everything else. And, you know, no men are anywhere. And I'm allowed to go in because I'm the owner of the pageant, and therefore I'm inspecting it. You know, I'm inspecting.
Right,
I want to make sure that
like
everything
is good. You're there.
Yeah, the dress. Is everyone okay? You know, they're standing there with no clothes. Is everybody okay? And you see these incredible-looking women. And so I sort of get away with things like that.
Elizabeth Thorpe, what do you make of that?
There's any number of problems. I'm not saying anything bold by saying there's any number of problems with this. And I feel like the problem that jumps out to me most immediately is not so much the sex aspect of this, but the power aspect of it, right? Like, he feels like he can get away with it because he's the owner, or he can get away with it because he's the star. And in the clip that you didn't play, and I appreciate that, where he's talking to Billy Bush, where he talks about how I can do what I want because X, Y, and Z. Like, this is very clearly a dominance issue as much as it is anything else. And I feel like that aspect needs to be discussed as much as the sexualization of these women, because this is about somebody being intimidating, being domineering, being predatory, and it is about imposing someone's will just because they are powerful and they can get away with it. So I think that power aspect needs to be addressed as much as the sex aspect, because when you talk about sexual assault, when you talk about intimidation, when you talk about harassment, these are issues of power intimidation as much as they are of sex.
Let me just follow on this thread with you, because I've heard a lot of people who defend Trump in recent days say that you know, he, or at least sort of way, let me change that, because we're going to talk about how he's been defended. Let me just shift to the people who have said it's not clear that he knows there's something wrong. But as you point out, when he says to Stern, "I can get away with that," and when he says to Billy Bush, "Because I'm the star, I can get away with that," is that an indication that he is aware that it's wrong?
He, on some level, knows that he's doing something other people can't. Now, that may mean in his mind he can do it because, and that it's not wrong because he's powerful. So what he knows as wrong or right, that's, I mean, that could be the problem right there. So he feels like he can do it because he's powerful and therefore it's not wrong. But that's what it comes back to, that power issue for me. And I feel like that needs to be addressed, that this is an issue of power as much as anything else.
That's such an interesting point, that the distinction between, it's not that he knows it's wrong, it's that he's admitting that he thinks it's fine because he's got the power. And then anybody else who's got the power, well, you can do it too, because that's what you do.
Precisely.
When you have power. Wow. Erin Kate, what do you make of that?
I'd just like to touch on the fact that he says women, but these are 14 to 19-year-old girls that we're talking about. He's saying that he can get away with going in and looking at 14 to 19 year old girls. And recently, I think it was Jill Oxford talked about women tweeting their first experience with sexual assaults and some sort of thing like that. Is this these girls' first experience? Is Donald Trump walking in on them in an area where they should feel safe? And again, so he's using that power that he has on children, really, we're talking about. And that is more disturbing, I think, because they're children, but the fact that he thinks it's okay, and that the fact that they're children doesn't matter.
John Cole, what do you think?
Well, one of the things that I'd like to point out initially is that in the video, Donald Trump references himself quite often as the Donald. So it's egocentric. He's referencing himself in the third person as if he's this character that can go and live out whatever it is that he wants to do. And you're absolutely right. These are children, and his constant reference to them as women and good-looking women, that is their only characteristic that he feels makes them valuable or worthwhile or worth his attention. It's horrendous. And I have to say that I'm sure lots of people were flashing back to their first experiences with sexual misconduct or harassment. And the sad part is, though, is from ages 14 to 19, I bet that a lot of these girls, that's not their first experience, although it might be one of the most memorable ones.
Okay. Lucas, what do you think?
Well, the big thing is the sense of entitlement that Donald has, and that kind of goes with the power and control aspect of it. This is like the stereotype of an abuser. This sense of entitlement, this sense that he knows this behavior is something. I don't know if he knows it's wrong, or for certain people it might be wrong, but for him it's okay because he has this power and control. He has this sense of entitlement. And I think on Saturday Night Live the other night during Weekend Update, Michael Che summed it up. I can't say he did it much more eloquently than I'm going to, but it's really Trump just thinks he's entitled to these things. He definitely sees women, especially these women in his pageants, as just objects that are there for his his pleasure in that situation, to make him more money, and then for the pleasure of everybody else, because they're going to go out in bathing suits and maybe do some interesting talent, and it's just kind of for all these men like him to gawk and be like, ooh, look at that thing. Now I have found my, fourth wife or something in a few years when she's old enough.
Yeah, he has said he thought 35 is the age of checkout for women. So, yeah. Okay, so I already see the phone ringing, and I want to do a couple of things here. First of all, I think John just raised an interesting point, and we're going to talk about this. This is something I know some people... that some people would even joke about, but this is an event that has actually triggered some really difficult things for survivors. And I'm going to read an email a little bit later this hour that illustrates exactly John's point there. And that, that is serious in and of itself. But I do want to hear from you. If you want to call the program and share either your concerns, if you want to push back, if you disagree, that's okay. We do want to talk about this. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I largely want, our guests and your calls and comments to kind of drive this hour, but before I get to your phone calls, I do want to listen because I think it's somewhat oddly instructive the way Trump surrogates have been defending him in different ways. So let's listen to some of those remarks and we'll get our guests' comments on that. First, you've got, let's listen to Ben Carson on CNN if we could. Ben Carson was talking to Breonna Keeler on CNN, and Breonna Keeler made it very clear to Ben, because Ben Carson was saying, look, this is just guys. And she said, I don't think so. And this was the conversation that ensued.
As I was growing up, people were always trying to talk about their sexual conquest and trying to make themselves appear, like the Don, Casanova. I'm surprised you haven't heard that. I really am.
I haven't heard it, and I know a lot of people who have not heard it.
Maybe that's the problem. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe that's the problem.
Yes, it's maybe the problem is with the women who just don't understand. Is that it's just an amazing comment from Ben Carson there. And I just want our guests to reflect on it. By the way, I don't think she's saying, I've never heard men talk about sex. I've had a number of people in the build-up to the show say, oh, come on, men aren't allowed to talk about sex anymore. Aaron Kate, I don't think that's a bit of a attacking a straw man, isn't it?
It's not about talking about sex. It's talking about sexually assault people and get away with it. It's, you know, people say, oh, what, it's, you don't like the lewd language. You can say that word all day long. I don't care. It's the fact that you coupled it with grab, you know.
Yep.
So that's the problem, is the violent nature of what he's saying.
And he's proud of it.
Exactly.
He's showing off, like, I can just walk up and kiss women and no one says anything because I'm so attracted to how beautiful they are. I can't help myself.
Right.
I would use stronger language than what you just did. It's not coupling these things together. It's conflating sexual language with sexual assault. These are wildly different things.
Right.
And an inability to understand the difference between crude language and sexual assault signals a real disregard for the agency of women. Right? Talking about something and then sexually assaulting someone is two entirely different things. And an inability to see the difference between I used an inappropriate word and I assaulted someone's agency shows a real disregard for the humanity of that person. And that inability to understand that, to conflate these two things, is truly problematic. That's what the issue is. It's the conflation of two completely different things. One is very egregious and one is just lewd.
And you're absolutely right. And one of the ways that this is represented in the locker rooms or casual conversations that Ben Carson is talking about is the objectification and the language we use, right? So when men are speaking about, or at least Ben Carson or Donald Trump, they're speaking about women, they say terms like "hit that," or it's you're very right. It's violent language. It's objective language. You're not speaking of these women in a human way, as if they're people. You're treating them as objects, and that's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, we could probably have a whole separate discussion on how we do talk about sex anyway, not sexual assault, but sex. But points all taken there. So there's Ben Carson. Blake Farenthold is a congressman from – that's okay. You're not the first who's had a phone ring on the show. You won't be the last, John Cole. That's
sorry
all right.
About that.
It's happened to me, my friend. Blake Farenthold is a Republican congressman from Texas who is a sort of a loud and proud Trump supporter. And last night he was talking to Chris Hayes of MSNBC. And Chris Hayes was essentially saying to him, you know, you are trying to excuse these comments, and these comments are about assault and boasting about what you can get away with because of power. And, you know, so Chris Hayes tried it a different way and said, would you be okay with Trump? Would you still support him if he boasted about saying, I can rape women? Listen.
If someone off the record in a locker room, this was not in a locker room, it was a workplace, said, I really like raping women, would that be locker room talk?
Again, it depends. You don't know the entire context.
But you would be fine with that.
I'm not here to defend Donald Trump. I don't like what he said.
If a tape came out with Donald Trump saying that,
defend himself on that.
If a tape came out with Donald Trump saying that, saying I really like to rape women, you would continue to endorse him.
That would be bad, and I would have to consider. I'd consider.
Do we need to weigh in on this? I mean, I don't even really – what needs to be said about that?
I think with Carson's little clip we played earlier,
yeah,
and then this one, the thing that's scariest to me is that all these Trump surrogates are taking on this persona and finding ways – like Ben Carson, you know, blamed – I forget the person from CNN, the woman he was talking
Brianna
to.
Brianna Keeler, yeah.
Yeah, he blamed her, like, you've never heard that? That's your problem. So it's this set of behaviors, you know, and now it's kind of this sort of minimizing, well, what's the context? And, like, and you can't just come out and say, no, I'm not okay with that, and I would not support it
anymore.
There's
a line.
Yeah,
you know? These are the moments where you realize when Trump said, I could shoot somebody in Fifth Avenue and not lose support, there's probably 30 to 35% of the country that is absolutely true for, apparently. I mean, we all thought that was a flippant remark. He was actually just telling the truth there. Aaron Kay, Elizabeth, you want to? I that comment from this congressman who couldn't even disavow this idea that if he brags about actual rape, then that's the line for me. He couldn't even say that.
Well, this is something that teaching political rhetoric classes, we talk about, you know, the way we communicate and the messages we send. And when people say things like, well, that's taken out of context, there are times when you have to ask, what is the context in which that would be okay? Contextualize that for me.
Yeah.
You put that in a context in which it would be okay to say these things. Yes, there are moments when we are saying this is what was said, and we don't provide the full context, but there are moments when there's simply not a context when it's okay. And it's never okay to say, I am really proud of the way I sexually assaulted these women. There's not a context in which that's acceptable. And the fact that there are people who are trying to contextualize this, to make this something that it's not, I think that is, and we'll probably get to where we're talking about rape culture a little bit more, yeah, like extensively, but I think that's precisely what we're looking at right now, is the, like, we're trying to normalize this. Mm-hmm. And the fact that for so many people this has been normalized, that's why people are trying to say, oh, it's just contextual. It's not contextual. In context, out of context, this is unacceptable.
And the reason why people are trying to normalize it, and what I think is one of the most tragic aspects of this issue, is that it's because they're trying to keep it a partisan political issue. They're trying to support Donald Trump as a politician because of their personal, beliefs or what have you. But that's so sad that they can't take their morals and just, focus on those instead of thinking about, what they want, what their vote is. Because the vote doesn't matter. This is not a partisan issue. This is not a political issue. This is a humanitarian issue. And it's a simple, very black and white case of, do you support someone who says these things, has this mentality? And, we're not talking about like the 1920s or suffrage in those times. We're talking about 2005, who, and probably to this present day, but it just hasn't been recorded, still holds these beliefs to be true. And now he's on a platform. He's allowed to spread his bigotry in national TV, and he's presidential candidate.
He could be the next president.
He could.
He could still win. The other kind of response we've been seeing is the sort of deflecting that, well, other people said this. And Betsy McCoy is a former New York State lieutenant governor, and she is one of Trump's surrogates who was on CNN with Don Lemon, who I think you're going to hear in this clip as well. And Betsy McCoy said, come on, Beyonce. Yeah, listen.
I mentioned rap music because it's full of the F word, the P word, the B word, the A word,
I don't think anybody likes that, but those people are not running for president.
Yes, but I wanted to point something out.
Okay, go ahead.
And which is that Hillary Clinton expresses that she finds the language on that bus horrific, but in fact, she likes language like this, quote, I came to slay, bitch. When he F me good, I take his ass to Red Lobster.
Did she say that?
That happens to be
Beyonce,
a line from Beyonce.
That.
Yeah, I know. That's
her
Beyonce's
favorite performer, whom she says she idolizes and would like to imitate.
Okay, now this is a case, I think, Elizabeth, where we do need to understand the context of what an artist is saying, of what, she's pulling lyrics out of a song. And please, listener, we have talked at length. When the film about NWA came out, I try to sit back and listen on these kind of conversations. And I know there's disagreement in all kinds of communities about these kind of themes in music. But I thought that was unfair and totally out of context, and also just trying to deflect against someone's accountability for their own words. What did you make of that?
Yeah. So I've read a number of pieces by McDonald is her name,
McCoy.
McCoy, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
I've read a number of pieces by her, and a lot of people have been saying similar things and try to use rap music and Beyonce as weapons against Clinton and just sort of liberalism at large right now. First off, that's a red herring in a thousand different ways. But even if you want to address this issue. So first off, this is once again taking two very different issues, right? Trump was talking about sexual assault. If you want to talk about Beyonce's lyrics as being crude and lewd, that's fine. But what she's talking about is things that she enjoys doing and she's proud of doing. And that's very different than saying, I'm going to do this to someone else, even though they don't want me to. And to try to compare those two is disingenuous.
Okay.
We could have a whole show on artistic license and what is and isn't appropriate for the public sphere. There are so many issues that we could compare and contrast with these two. But to lose sight of the fact that what Beyonce is talking about is what she does as a person because she wants to do it, and what Trump is doing to someone else even when they don't want them to, if you try to conflate those two issues as being similar, you are doing a disservice to the issue, you're doing a disservice to the victims of these assaults, you're doing a disservice to the entire situation.
And at its base, it's actually completely irrelevant what Beyonce sings about or performs,
right,
or whatever. It's completely irrelevant.
It's total red herring.
Irrespective of anything that is to do with Hillary Clinton's policies or her beliefs or anything. And you know, like you said, Evan, it's misdirection, it's redirection, and it's deflecting off of things that Trump actually did, and it's trying to grasp at straws and find, you know, chinks in Hillary's policy or something like that, or her personality. But it's not the same. It's not the same. It's not comparable.
I think it's important too. You know, Trump is running to be the president of our country, the quote-unquote most powerful person in the world, or at least the most powerful person in our country. And for him to kind of take this and revert to, you know, 1920s caveman practically set of beliefs that we have and glorify it and be very proud and peacock it and make his supporters and his surrogates believe this as well is very different from Hillary liking Beyonce, because that's one lyric in one Beyonce song. You know, there's lots of other things she's done that are, you know, very much about empowering women and girls, and that's, you know, and she's Beyonce. Like, if you don't, who doesn't like Beyonce? She's a great entertainer.
Not to mention some of the uncomfortable tinge of race to that.
Right.
You know, which is its own whole other aspect of it.
Well, yeah, the whole hip hop thing, they've had that discussion in the community forever, you know, and there's plenty of people in the hip-hop world who are trying to elevate the conversation and move away from, you know, talking about money, drugs, and, you know, doing terrible things to women. Like, there's plenty of hip-hop artists who don't do that, and they're trying to do better things and recognize this is dragging our whole community down. And they're two, it's apples, it's not even apples and oranges, it's like apples and Martian oranges or something.
I didn't want to know what a Martian orange is, but I take the point there, Lucas. And we are let's get our only break in, and then we're coming back to your phone calls. If you're waiting on the line, and I know we're filled up here, we're going to devote our second half hour to this. I already had a question on sort of how do you define rape culture, that kind of a question. And I think that we're going to work through that as we work through our phone calls in our second half hour. We're hearing from Aaron Cade Howard, who's the co-creator of Lady Parts Theater and an equality activist here in Rochester, Dr. Elizabeth Thorpe, assistant professor of communications at the College at Brockport, Lucas Sink, a facilitator in Resolve's Stand Up Guys program, and John Cole, vice president of outreach for the University of Rochester's student organization Men Opposing Violence Everywhere. Short break, and your phone calls next. Coming up in our second hour, we explore the history of the 1816 Farmington Quaker Meeting House. What is that? If you've never seen it, or never been there, or haven't studied it, you might be surprised at just how much history is within the walls of that 200-year-old building in our region. From Susan B. Anthony to so many others, we're going to be talking about its history and the upcoming celebration next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Carol in Livonia is first up. Go ahead, Carol. Hi, Carol. Are you there? Carol. All right, Carol, call back if you could. We're going to continue down the line. Allison in Rochester next up. Go ahead, Allison. Boy, maybe it's our phone system. Maybe that's what it is. Oh. So I apologize. Okay, let's try it again. Allison, can you hear me? No? All right, so let's do this. We're going to try to figure out what's wrong with the phones. And in the meantime, I have a pile of written responses. And let me start with this. I want to read a listener's story. This is somebody who I know I don't know well, but I also understand and I have known of this story. And so when she wrote to share this story, I can only tell you that, you know, I'm not going to share her full name, but I do understand her story. And here's what she wanted to express about what Donald Trump's recent comments have done to her. Quote, "Show me your blank. Those were the last words that my now ex-husband said to me the night he viciously assaulted me because I told him I wanted a divorce. He then proceeded to try and force me to show him my private parts and take what he thought was rightfully his. Never mind that he had been a horrible husband and father for the past several years and had refused medication and counseling for his seriously degrading mental health. His colleagues and friends had listened to him speaking violently about me in derogatory ways. He referred to me as a bitch and a wraith, yet none of them felt alarmed enough to come and tell me. I had no idea a Category 5 hurricane husband was headed my way. So please, stop brushing off Trump's mental illness, narcissistic personality disorder, and sociopathy, and predatory actions as just immaturity. I'm here today because people downplayed a violent, mentally ill man's talk and eventual actions toward me, and I barely survived. America will be suffering the same fate as I did if we don't change the way we're thinking about this threat." End quote. I'll start with you, Aaron Cade. What do you think?
I think that brings up a great point, which is there's always somebody that hears these things said. You know, we just saw Billy Bush was suspended from his job because he took part in that conversation with Donald Trump. We, as men, I think it's really important, and I know you guys do this work, that you listen to women when they talk about their experiences, but not only that, when you hear other men talking in these ways, that you don't agree with it, that you say, hey, I'm not okay with that, because it's going to be men that, I think, women have been doing this work forever, but we need men to come in to the conversation more. And, you know, there's a great man, Jackson Katz, who does all of this kind of work. And, you know, he says it's not a women's issue. It's a men's issue. You know, men are the perpetrators of violence against women. Men are generally the perpetrators of violence against men. And it's a men's issue, and it's a leadership issue, which goes back to some of the things that Elizabeth was saying. You have to be brave enough to speak up against other men and say, this isn't okay. You can't treat people that way. You can't talk that way. This has to change.
And it's you know, really interesting that you make that comment, because Jill Soloway, the comedian, just wrote a really great piece for Time magazine on toxic masculinity and hypermasculinity, and how she was speaking with a lot of her male friends and colleagues and saying, you know, Trump is writing this off as locker room talk. Boys will be boys. You know, do you speak this way? And it was a resounding, no, not at all. Those aren't my friends. That's not me. And so she followed that up with, well, you know, when you do hear people speak that way, what do? Do you say anything about it? Do you tell them not to? Do you tell them not to objectify, sexualize women? And the resounding answer for that was, well, no, not really, because it's a quote unquote difficult thing to do, to go against kind of the stream, right? To go against the flow of the stream. But, you know, you're absolutely right. Men need to be doing that. Men need to be thinking about the impact of our actions and words and feelings. And I just think it's deplorable that Donald Trump is saying that it's okay, or trying to write it off because it was something that he was saying kind of in private, and he wasn't aware that it was being recorded or whatever, because that doesn't excuse it or justify it whatsoever. Just because you're having certain thoughts or saying things in private, it doesn't mean that, you know, you're a good person just because you don't do that in public.
And that's the one big thing, you know, like we always talk about violence against women. We take the men out of it, and anytime violence really comes up, if it's a man committing the violence, we don't really say anything about the man, unless maybe he's, you know, he's black or Hispanic or something like that. Then we add that in there so we can identify them. But if it's just like a white dude doing something, well, there was violence today. Doesn't, right. You know, because there's these passes that we have with this entitlement and this privilege. And I think the other big thing, you know, the whole purpose of stand-up guys, you know, being formed was because there's not enough men talking about this. And there's, you know, you survey guys, and you know, probably a large percentage of them will say, you know, yeah, I don't talk like that. That's crazy. I would never, you know, that's just gross. But you probably an even bigger person, you know, say it's 80% of the guys who say, yeah, I'm not cool with that. 95% of those 80% are like, yeah, I don't say anything because I'm afraid. I don't want people to then deflect it towards me and, you know, say I'm all the derogatory terms that we can use for men who don't fit this masculine mold. And it's, you know, I've thought about this a lot doing the work, like how do we help men maybe be more comfortable talking about this stuff and being able to call each other out and just be accountable. Like, it's not good for anybody. It just, we need it to stop at this point. But having a man who could potentially be our president just normalizing this and talking of, like, oh, that's what I talk about every third Tuesday when I'm taking a schwitz with some guys. Like, no, it's not, like, that's not normal. No, we can't have it be normal anymore.
And it starts with doing what's right and let the consequences follow. Oh, we're worried that someone's going to be offended, that a friend, in the same way that here's the stereotype in this country. We all have the uncle at the holiday who's saying something, maybe saying something racist. Do we let it slide? I am not going to be the holier than thou. I will say I have been there at times and I've let it slide. I have not spoken up enough. Whether it's sexist, misogyny, racist. And it is a little harder. You're right. But you have to do what's right and let the consequences follow. And if that means, well, this is going to be an awkward moment in our relationship. This may rupture the relationship. Do you want relationships with people like that? This is not me being holier than thou. I have to improve too. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Well, what's sort of interesting about this incident, though, is that this has apparently been the line that can't be crossed for so many people that have allowed him to legitimize things that, mm-hmm. like, are truly horrible. Mm-hmm. I mean, the ableism, the racism, the misogyny that's just been, like, permeating our public discourse for months now. But this was a step too far. Out of something like 331 major Republican figures that are in power right now, more than one in four at this point have disavowed Trump. So there has, I mean, people are running far away from him right now. Now, we can talk about how this could be a race issue, like where were you when he was talking about Muslims, about mm-hmm. Hispanics, mm-hmm. about any number of groups. But, you know, we get to the white women issue and boom, that's a step too far. But this has been too much. So Republican leadership seems to have found the line. Now, in some ways, that's been a little bit problematic because the line seems to be our daughters, our sisters, our mothers, our wives, and not just
we respect women, right?
It's our,
right.
It's
our voting base,
yes,
the people who are
how we are
this.
Related to these people that we have to protect them as opposed to we respect women, which is a show in and of itself, I think. But for whatever reason, this is the line that cannot be crossed. And I think it's interesting to watch the political fallout, especially when you think about the electoral votes and how those are all coming into play. We've got states that are swing states now that have never been swing states before. Georgia, yeah. Utah, Arizona, some solidly red states that are all of a sudden strangely purple. And some of that is because this incident has put Clinton 9 to 11 points ahead. Mm-hmm. So this is a line that some people have found unacceptable, that for whatever reason, all this other was okay.
But you got to think some of that, you know, I was reading or saw something that, you know, the election could potentially come down to white suburban women
right.
outside of Philadelphia.
Yes.
So it's like, uh-oh. And not just at the top there, but then the whole down ballot thing, which has been, there's been a lot of discussion about mm-hmm. that, is how this is going to affect all the races downstream.
Yes.
And so now by the figurehead of the Republican Party really turning off a lot of, you know, suburban middle class women who can, you know, in some places have been very solidly Republican for a very long time. Now they just might switch to the other line of the ballot and just vote straight down it without even really paying all that much attention in the local and state elections, because unfortunately that's how people vote in our country.
You actually make a really important point that we can talk about the ideology of it and we can talk about the philosophy of it, but the political fallout of this is going to be hugely important for this election, for the down ballot, and for elections to come for the next 4 years.
All right, your phone calls are loaded, and I think we can get back to the phones successfully now. So let me try to work through as many as we can. Back to Livonia, it's Carol. Go ahead, Carol. No? Yes? No? I'm not hearing it if it's there, Rob. I'm sorry. I still don't hear the phones. So hold on. Stay right there. Let me try line two, just to see. And then maybe it's me. Maybe I'm the problem. Allison in Rochester, are you there? No, Steve in Brighton, you're there. Hey there. Okay.
Hey, Evan, how are you?
Well, line two is working. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
This is a very good topic. I grew up in a small town in the South, and I feel like it was very repressive. And what I mean by that is that we had to conform and to contradict, you know, an important football player or the guy that had the most money in town who might tell an awful racist joke was very difficult to do. And I will admit that growing up, I would usually let those things slide. But about 15 years ago, I had a contractor in my home, and he said to me, "Do you like dirty jokes?" Exactly what he said. And I don't particularly, but I didn't want to ostracize him, so I said, "Oh, maybe." And he told me this joke that was so offensive, so horrible, that I didn't know what to do. I just cringed with chills and didn't want him in my home anymore. And even though this person was highly skilled in a very sort of esoteric thing,
I'm never recommending him again. I just couldn't bear it, okay? And it bothers me that Ben Carson or anyone would go on and say, well, everybody talks like that. Haven't you heard that before? Because they don't. They just don't. Okay, that's all I had to say.
Well, Steve, thanks for the phone call. And I will also say, just as I said earlier, I'm with you on being regretful that I can think of moments where I didn't speak up more. And I think that first step is just owning that. So good for you, and thank you for sharing that. I mean, I guess the next question is, next time someone does that, are we going to call it out straight right there? You know, I mean, but
I think an important thing to keep in mind during any dialogue like this, when you open up a dialogue with someone, is there is no perfect person. There is no one that has just from the get-go, right out the womb, been a feminist and you know, pro-choice or pro women's rights or humanitarian. There's no one. It's a learning curve. I myself, I have a mother and a sister, and my parents taught me about sexual assault and what was wrong and how to treat human beings. But I wasn't aware of the vast severity of statistics, particularly in the college setting, until I got to college. And at the University of Rochester, part of the freshman orientation program is this fantastic, fantastic program called Red Light, Green Light, put on by our Title IX coordinator, Morgan Levy, and Kyle Orton from the Center of Student Conflict Management. And they tell you about a lot of the statistics that happen, not far away or, somewhere on the West Coast or East Coast or down South or whatever, but like right here throughout the entire nation at every college campus, what is representative of sexual misconduct and sexual assault. And it was shocking to me. And I didn't know any of that before. And that is essentially why I decided to join a group like MOVE, is because I wanted to make a difference. I wanted to educate myself, and I wanted to actually start changing culture, because through all of high school, I've been part of many locker rooms. And while it isn't as severe as some of the things Donald Trump has been saying, male culture, especially, adolescent culture, is very much derogatory towards women. It's very bigoted. There are a lot of violent, undertones due to the masculinity, and it completely flies by. Not once does anyone say anything, because it's just like, oh, it's just kids, just boys. So I'm sorry to interrupt the phone calls, but I just wanted to say that, no one should be feeling this pang of regret because they have never been this shining star of a person, because as long as you can stop and reflect and understand, how to act moving forward, or you learn something new, I mean, that is the sign that you are an empathetic person, and that's the right thing.
Can I make a really quick response to that phone call? So when you say, I don't speak that way, I absolutely believe you, and I think it's so insulting when people's defense is, oh, all men speak that way. Because they don't. And I get so defensive of the amazing men in my life who
right.
are so respectful
yeah.
and are wonderful people. I think of my husband and the men I hang out with and my colleagues. They don't speak that way. I do not believe they speak that way when they're in private. And the defense that all men speak that way, I think, is so insulting to men. And I know the men in my life get very upset when they hear that defense. And I can't abide by that. So when I hear, the men in my life say, I don't, I absolutely believe that they don't. And I find that defense particularly troubling, because no, I don't like the not all men hashtag, because I think it's usually just an excuse to, but it's true this time, not all men.
Okay. We'll move back to your phone calls. Louise, go ahead, Louise.
Oh, that would be me, right?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi. Yes. I think what I'm hearing people sort of saying really is that, especially just in the last 5 minutes, is, everybody has thoughts and unwanted thoughts, and, we live in a violent society, we're surrounded by sexual imagery, blah, 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 blah. And so we all have to deal with that. That's part of living in civilization. So Trump feels that he knows that his thoughts and his actions and what he wants to do, he knows that those things are wrong. That's why he said that he gets away with it. So he knows. It's not like he doesn't know that it's wrong. So when you say he's entitled, a good, wise person would stop themselves from, first of all, just saying those things, let alone doing what he's talking about doing. Okay, so what we want as a leader, is not a sexual, somebody abusive. So he's just out there saying, I'm abusive, and I'm going to abuse whoever I want to. And and the Republicans, whatever, everybody's sitting by saying, you know, just shocked at how abusive he is and can be. I mean, this is not somebody, you know, I wouldn't let, I was sexually abused as a child repeatedly, and the person who abused me is still alive. And, you know, I will not allow any girl or woman that I know in his presence without them knowing, you know, I mean, you know, because I just don't trust him, that's all, you know, that's my experience. So I know what abusive people are like, and he feels it's okay, that's all. So just ask yourself, you know, do you feel comfortable being led by somebody who thinks it's okay? And can I just, one other point is that, okay, words sure. are okay. Like, you can't be arrested, I don't think, for being verbally abusive. Like, assault, what he's actually talking about doing is assault and battery, like bordering on rape, okay? Assault is if he intends, you know, to kiss somebody who doesn't want them to, or to touch them, or slap them, or grope them. Like, if he intends to do it, and he puts out his hand, that's assault, okay? He can be arrested for that. Battery is if he actually touches that person, if he actually slaps the person, or he actually gropes the person. That's battery, okay? Rape, like the Stanford swimmer, who I believe they said is kind of a horrible term, digitally penetrated that unconscious girl, that was considered digital rape. So, you know, these are the terms. And so if he thinks it's a joke, you know, to talk that way. I mean, I couldn't vote for him, but I couldn't vote for him because he's abusive in so many, many ways. And this is just one amongst, you know, all the ones that we've seen.
Louise, thanks for the phone call, and thanks for being willing to share your own perspective and experience. I know it's not an easy one, and I think her comment leads me to want to read a short email, because that should pivot the discussion a little bit here. I'm getting a little concerned about one thing, so let me just go ahead and read this email. Let's see here. Oh, it's someone who didn't share their name, but I'll read it anyway. How do you define rape culture? Bill Clinton. Okay, I mean, I'm not sitting here at all excusing Bill Clinton. That feels a little deflecting here. But having said that, Louise's comment that, you know, the person who victimized her is still with us and doesn't think that it was a problem. We are reaching a little bit of this, the concern about a bubble or an echo chamber. That most of the people hearing this discussion, I think, probably agree with a lot of what's being said. There are some who probably are frustrated, and you know, I know there's a good amount of Trump supporters who listen to the program, and so maybe they've switched stations, or maybe they think Trump's wrong in this, but they'll still support him. But I guess what I'm asking is this. How do we take this conversation and this theme of respect, and this anti-misogyny, how do you start to break into the tens of millions of people who are going to vote a certain way or going to act a certain way and start to change their minds that misogyny is not okay, that respect is something that needs to be absolutely valued? I don't know. I mean, Elizabeth, you know what I'm saying? I mean, we've got to be able to just get outside the echo chamber. How do we do that?
So, on the most basic level, right, the second waivers had the, you know, the personal is political and the political is personal. There has to be, as we've all talked about, there has to be an effort on the personal level for us all to be able to say, this is not okay, or this is what the issue is, or we have to be able to say in our personal lives, in our digital lives, and whenever we see something wrong, we have to be able to call it out. And it's been called call-out culture online. Mm-hmm. But there has to be a movement at the ground level where we say, this is unacceptable and these are the reasons why. And I'm particularly pleased with this panel today because we have men here who are willing to do that, right? Because one of the reasons why people saw second wave as not being so effective was because it was, right, just the women's movement. It got that kind of bad reputation as being, oh, these are just women doing women's things, right? Like, you know, the third wave has become this much more inclusive movement where we do have a large group of people, men, women, transgender, all inclusive movement, saying this is what is needed to get things to change. So there has to be that personal and political, like, connection. we could talk about like the next step. We can talk about how you become politically active. We can talk about how you become an advocate. But I think there has to be a moment at some point in your life where you realize, I have to be able to say, no, I'm not going to accept this, or I'm not going to take that anymore.
Yeah.
And we all have to have that moment, otherwise progress doesn't happen. And I know that puts a lot of the onus on the individual, but this has to happen at that level.
Okay. John Cole?
So to answer your question, you know, kind of initially, about how do we reframe this? How do we change the minds of possible voters, right? And I guess you're speaking specifically about this.
It's not just about voters.
No. I was saying
how we treat people.
Exactly. So no, but how do we get people that might currently support Trump or, you know, a vote certain way? How do we get them to understand this theme we're discussing of respect, of empathy, of, and, you know, as sad as it is to say, I truly believe that there's nothing you can do on a massive scale to do it. There's no article you can post or, mm-hmm. you know, I honestly believe that there's nothing Donald Trump could really do, even if it was recorded, that could just change the minds of everyone. There would still be people that are just so strong in their political convictions or their ideologies of what they think the country should look like or et cetera, that they're willing to look past certain things because it's not personal for them. And this is one of the reasons why I think MOVE has been such a successful group on our college campus so far, is because what we do is we facilitate small group discussions with fraternities, sororities, sports teams, residence halls, you know, freshman groups, things like that. And we have these small group discussions where we take a bunch of our facilitation members that are all trained to speak about difficult things like this, and we put them in front of, you know, eight people, and we just ask tough questions, and we inform them, and we let the silence sink in, and we let it be an uncomfortable silence, and then people get talking and people understand. And you know, it can be very, very trying, emotionally trying for us as facilitators to sit there with fraternity brothers that are just like not taking this seriously, or they're trying to shut us out because they feel that they're being attacked just because they're in a frat or whatever it is. But at the end of the day, after you get past that, and if you really just say, you can say, it can just be one little thing that will speak to them. And if they walk away just feeling a little bit different or knowing something they didn't know before, I mean, that is how you enact changes on a small scale. And that's why progress, it takes a lot longer, and it can be a lot more difficult, and it can be arduous, and it can be emotionally trying for those that are trying to enact it. But I mean, that's how you do it, is you access people's empathy. You look them in the eye, you explain things to them. And there's nothing massive you can do. There's nothing you can do on TV. There's nothing you can do on the radio. There's nothing that will do that other than human interaction.
Okay.
And just a quick add-on to that, you know, I started doing a lot of this work as batterer intervention, so working with men who generally had some sort of mandate that they had committed some sort of domestic violence, you know, crime. And so they had to come sit with us for 26 weeks for 90 minutes. And the one thing, our biggest thing in there was accountability, accountability, accountability. And I think, you know, challenging people to look at these things differently and presenting them with this other option and being like, you know, you got to be accountable for what you've done, and how can you make things better in the future, and trying to appeal to something to them. You know, a lot of times, a lot of the guys I worked with had children. So it's like, okay, you don't want your children to be in this cycle, whether it's you have a daughter and you don't want her to be abused by her significant other, or you don't want a son who's going to get, you know, just lost in the criminal justice system because he got in trouble. So how do you change your behavior and your beliefs so your kids don't have that impact as well? And just by holding people accountable, and like I said, we had a nice audience. We had them for 26 weeks for 90 minutes. Usually by the end of 26 weeks, after having these conversations over and over and over again, some of it would kind of sink in, and you could see the shift. You know, I'd always say like between 6 and 12 weeks, you could see them kind of shifting and being like, these two crazy, you know, facilitators kind of know what they're talking about, and maybe I should really start listening to what they've been saying.
All right, 25 seconds, Aaron, Kate. Final thoughts from you on this, then.
I think touching a little bit on what you're saying is how we talk to young people about it. I have a 9-year-old daughter, and thinking about her, growing up, and it's scary. And I think talking to our kids about how we treat each other early on, starting immediately, you know, and continuing that on through their life, will really make a big difference.
Sure. Just relationship education, starting young.
Yeah.
We see a lot of that in Scandinavia and other places that treats it seriously, starting around age 4, just how you respect people. And So listeners, sorry about some of our ups and downs with the phone issues this hour, but boy, we were overwhelmed with commentary. And I hope you've appreciated the discussion. You know, I am a little worried that it doesn't always hit the people who, well, again, I'm not sitting here lecturing the world to change, but I do think we need to try to keep reaching out and breaking across the borders. Our thanks to Elizabeth Thorpe. Great to see you. Thank you for being here. Aaron Kate Howard. Thank you, Aaron Kate.
Thank you.
Lucas Sink. Thank you, Lucas. John Cole.
Thank you so much for having us.
Short break, more connections next.